Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
Welcome to the AppSats.org Betrayal Recovery Radio Show. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach. And I am so happy to be with you. You know, that was a woman who was just concerned about when it's appropriate to begin to establish a sexual relationship again. And, you know, that's an individual, definitely an individual decision. For some people, they never stop having sex, even throughout the discovery and the disclosure of a betrayal. For others, that's the first thing that stops. When you've been sexually betrayed, it's not unusual to want to protect yourself and to not want to engage in that sacred behavior with somebody that you don't trust. So you got a whole other subpopulation that doesn't want to have sex. And then for some women, they go back and forth. You know, they do want sex. They want that closeness. They initially revolt at thinking about it, and then as they begin to get a little bit more comfortable, they take some risks. They see what it's going to be like. And last but not least, and that I really mean not least, because there's lots of other kinds of collateral damage that occur sexually when partner betrayal has really involved so much wounding. But I said last but not least, because what I really meant by that is that there are some women who really don't want to have sex, but they go ahead and have sex because they're too afraid that if they don't have sex with their husbands, that their husbands, that this will legitimize their husbands looking other places. Now, you can imagine, I'm sure, how a woman could have most of those feelings. And in actuality, sometimes they do. But if you're a partner, think about which was your most common response to sex. Did you have sex because you were afraid not to, for fear that it would push him further into his addiction? Did you say, absolutely no sex, he's betrayed me, there is no way I'm going to do that? Did you think, I want to have sex because I want to know that he loves me? And so you did have sex, or was it intermittent? Did you do it a little bit of everything for a variety of reasons? Well, here's where AppSats comes into play. When this kind of betrayal occurs, it can be really, really tough to know how to move forward, how to stay safe, how to try again. When should you try? When should you not try? And so an AppSats professional, and I am saying for anybody who may be listening for the first time, AppSats is a partner-sensitive organization that trains clinicians and coaches on how to deal with partner betrayal. So when you work with one of us, I have to tell you, we've got expertise in this subject. And if we don't, we know who in our organization does. So you can get to the right people at the right time. And our main goal is to keep you safe, to give you a voice, to have you figure out what are your plans, what are your needs, how to go forward, and how to take care of yourself. That's what we do at AppSats. And most of these shows are actually geared towards AppSats professionals. Today, not so much. I had a man contact me who had been through betrayal, and he said, can I share my story? Now, what I know to be true is that it's really helpful when people can share their story. And so he actually had some theories that are solely his own. I know that AppSats does not necessarily endorse them, but I thought, well, his story was interesting, and he really talks about the principles that got him through the denial and the betrayal. And I just thought he had a lot of good information to share. So we got him on the show. I'm speaking of Larry Pallotta, who wanted to talk about the connection between betrayal and, at least in his life, his childhood programming. And so he's excited because he knows that listeners like you will learn what this looked like in his life. And if there are any similarities to your life, what you might do to feel better about yourself. And so, again, I called it from chaos to purpose because he actually has a chaos to purpose scale that he wants to talk about. And you know, if you've been listening to this show, we work really diligently on exposing you to a lot of concepts, a lot of ideas, a lot of workshops, a lot of intensives, a lot of books, a lot of videos. Oh, speaking of videos, I go by Carol the Coach, but my name's Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I have two podcasts. And last night, I was wrapping up my online course because I have written the book, Help Her Heal, and that is an empathy workbook for sex addicts to help their partners heal. I just find that men do not know how to do empathy, and they are so traumatized themselves by what they've done to you. I know you may not feel that way, and maybe some of them aren't, but there are a lot of men that are really, really, really traumatized. And so because of that trauma, they avoid you. They avoid dealing with things. They brush it under the rug. They minimize. They deny. And so they do the very things that you don't want as partners of betrayal. And so I wrote this book to help addicts to know how to help you heal. And I hope at some point you get a chance to look at it. Even though it's written for him, I would love your feedback as to what you appreciated about the book and what I might have been able to change to make it even more partner-friendly. It is a super partner-friendly book. And I think I'm all over the place today. I for the first time, I looked at my Amazon reviews. I only had two. The book is selling like hotcakes, but I only had two. And the first one said that I wasn't partner sensitive. I teach the course on partner sensitivity. I'm like, this person did not read my book. I don't know how she could have said that. And then she said I endorsed the codependency model. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I so don't endorse the codependency model. I don't endorse that model anywhere, anyway, anyhow, let alone partner betrayal. So it kind of hurt my feelings. But, you know, what I know, and certainly everybody and their brother, including Brene Brown and Oprah, and they all say don't read the reviews. And I hadn't read the reviews till a couple of weeks ago. And the book's been out since May, and I wasn't even curious. I mean, I want to know what you all think, but it's not like I have to know what you think to know that it's helpful for this field. I just know that it's helpful. So I just commented to this person. I said, I don't think you read my book. There's not one thing about codependency in this book, and I definitely don't
believe that partners are codependent. And besides that, this book is all about partner sensitivity. My goodness. Feel free to contact me and show me where it isn't. Well, I don't know what happens when you comment with somebody's review, because I sure haven't heard from her. But I'd like to. You know, I'd like to have a dialogue, find out why she feels that way. And so this week I am completing my online course that I'm super jazzed about for the book. And it's actually me being videotaped on top of my PowerPoint presentation, talking about what I want you to know if you're an addict, to help her heal. And then I give lots of articles, and I share videos. I have one video called The Gift of Being a Sex Addict, which is an oxymoron because it is not the gifts of being a sex addict, but what I really was stating is it's the gifts of being a recovered sex addict, because I truly believe when somebody is in recovery, when they're in recovery, they are 100% healthier than most of the men out there that didn't cheat on their wives, because they learn the skills to really attend to their wife's needs. So this online course is going to come out this weekend. It should have come out today, but I said, oh, there's one more tweak I want to make. So I said, don't do anything yet. And I've got a podcast from Dr. Patrick Carnes that I did with him, and where he talks to sex addicts about how they can take their life to the next level. I'm real proud of that. And it's just overall, well, I just had somebody critique it. And, of course, people that critique your work are going to be kind. But this man said, Carol, your course was rich and powerful. And that's what I want to hear. I want to know that it's helpful and it's rich with information and it's powerful to the addict and to the partner. And I said that one of the reasons that we didn't publish it today is because I wanted to encourage partners to read the book, take the course, and know what I'm teaching so that they can follow up on some of the skills that I'm giving the addict, so that you'll know what he's doing when he's using AVR, the empathy formula, or you'll know when he's using gentle assertiveness with you, or you'll know when he's checking in about what your needs are, that he's really wanting to know what he can do to make you feel safer. And so this online course, as well as my book, is for the addict, but it's also for the partner. And it certainly can be for the coupleship. And I won't tell you how much it costs over the air, because I don't think I'm allowed to do that, but I am giving a 20% discount until November 24th to anybody who wants that course. So I'll keep you posted. We've got a lot of talented people in our organization, and they are kicking out a lot of videos. They're kicking out books. They're doing presentations to help you heal. And if you're in St. Louis next week on Wednesday, October 2nd, don't forget, we are doing our workshop on this information and on internal family systems. My colleague, Lori Hall, who's the president of our organization, and I are going to be doing this workshop all day, and we're inviting any and all of you. I think it's $199. Oh, I'm not supposed to talk about money. Sorry about that. But it's going to be great, and it's in St. Louis, and you can get information by contacting me at carol@carolthecoach.com or Googling the SASH, S-A-S-H, organization, because they're actually putting on the conference. All right. So as promised, I was telling you, Larry really wants to talk about his situation and what I'm calling post-traumatic growth, the things that he gleaned from a tragedy and learned from and actually made his life better. And that's what I really believe is the real secret to life, is taking an obstacle and turning it around and making it work for you as opposed to against you. So I've got Larry Bellotta on the line, and he is going to be talking more about his story, and also he's going to be sharing the principles that he learned from it. So, Larry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. And so I want to ask you, because obviously you have quite the story, I wanted you to share with our listening audience a little bit about your story and how you became a marriage coach.
So what made me a marriage coach was a marriage problem. And what my marriage problem was, pretty simple. My wife comes from a completely different family value system than I do. And I come from a completely different family value system than she does. And one of the ways we could see this is when we married back in 1974, our parents did not even want to meet each other or talk to each other. That's how different those people were. And so with completely different values.
Wow, you knew you were in trouble, didn't you?
No, I didn't know. I was 24 years old. I didn't know anything. And and so didn't know anything, didn't know what was happening, just trying to survive, couldn't know anything. And so what happened is Marcia hated my parents' values. Why? Because she was programmed by her parents. Her parents were programmed, who programmed her, didn't like anything about my value system, and I didn't like anything about her value system. And, of course, naturally, we married each other, right? So when those clashing values began, it began, like, right away, like the day after the wedding. And the determination Marcia had was she was going to rip my values out of me and replace them with her values. That's what she was going to do. And she took 27 years to do it. And it was extremely painful for me and extremely painful for her. So what held us in place is that we were both programmed by our parents to be married and miserable. And so we both had to stay because we were living under this message of childhood, is that you have to stay married and stay miserable, because both of our parents stayed together and they were married and miserable. So we started our hellish marriage in 1974 when they elected, or when they impeached Richard Nixon. And I came out of that hell when they elected the second Bush. That's how long that was.
Wow. And can I
ask
you one quick question? Because obviously you said the parents had different values, and actually so did the both of you, because you were raised by your parents. So will you give our listening audience an idea of one of the differing values that you were dealing with as a couple?
Here's a real simple one. I had most of the programming from my father. My father had a belief that when he wants his time to do whatever he wants his time to do whatever he wants, and he will do anything he wants. Okay? So I had the value. When I want to do whatever I want, I want to do whatever I want. Okay? Now, Marcia's value is, by the way, her parents were homeowners, and they could fix anything and everything. And so they were always fixing and repairing the home that they built from scratch. My parents never owned a home. They lived in an apartment, couldn't fix anything. So I'm programmed to not fix anything. I'm programmed to live in an apartment. And so Marcia's programmed for home ownership. Already we have trouble because now I don't really care about a house. I don't care about a yard. I don't care about plants. I don't care about fixing anything. And so I want to do whatever I want to do. How do you think this is going to go with Marcia? Terribly. Because Marcia is programmed that the man has to fix everything. Well, I'm not programmed to fix anything. My father didn't know which end of a hammer to use. I mean, just real, real simple things like that. My father had a belief that when I get home, when I get home, I want to watch TV and relax, right? But her her value system said, when you get home, you need to make my life easier.
So, no matter where
you look in our values, there's clashing values all over the place. And so Marcia was determined to stay and rip them out of me and replace them with her own. And so that's what made this marriage so unusual. Because typically when people have clashing values, they don't stay around. They leave each other. So what made our marriage so different is we stayed. And so what happened is I decided I had to become somebody I could live with. I had to feel good about myself. And so while I have this woman ripping my values out of me, I have to figure out, who am I? What do I believe in? What do I value? And so she made me, at the start, question all my values. So my father was a gambler and my mother was an alcoholic. And so there's two value systems that really don't belong, right? But there were lots of other things that I valued that were irresponsible, self-centered, egocentric, narcissistic. I had all kinds of these values in me. And so she was determined to remake me, and it was a terribly long and painful process.
Okay.
But I learned a lot.
You did learn a lot, and you talked about experiencing betrayal. So at what point in your marriage was there betrayal?
The betrayal happened, and when we think about betrayal, we think about the man leaves his wife for another woman. That's what we think about for betrayal. But this betrayal is not like that. This betrayal is, I want you to love me and accept me as I am. That's what I want. She didn't love me, and she didn't accept me as I am. She wanted to change me into something completely different. And that was a betrayal to me. Right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm betrayed because she's forcing me to become somebody I'm not. Right? And so the normal reaction is to fight, to hate, to resist, to get revenge, and all of that. That's the normal reaction. And so I learned that the more you become that, the more you resist, the more you fight, the more you push back, the more you fight and the more you resist. What's that old saying? What you resist persists.
Absolutely.
Well, it resisted, I resisted, and it persisted. And so what I discovered is that what's happening out there is not the problem. What's happening in here is the problem. But nobody understands in here, because we don't understand our own mind. We don't understand what our mind is made of. So what had to happen over these 27 years, I had to discover something. I had to discover the little voice inside my head. I had to learn what that was, and that it had a whole mission that it was going to use on me and do me in. So the way it works, and this is the way it works in all relationships, is the person outside does something. Inside, there's an explosive reaction. Now, you don't even know about this reaction. It just explodes in you. And it explodes to fight and be against. And if you picture that, the event happens outside somebody's behavior, and then an explosion happens inside. You are in the middle. You're in the middle between the explosion outside and the explosion inside. And you're being crushed by that event, the inside-outside explosion. Because outside, you have this person reacting badly. Inside, you have this emotional explosion that you don't understand and can't control. Well, that's going to be the end of the marriage if you keep that up. And so what I discovered is that the problem that we all suffer from is called against energy. Against energy is what's doing us in. Because when you are against anything, when you're against anybody, anything, any event, anything, if you're against it, I don't like it, I resent it, it makes me mad, I'm frustrated by it, I hate it, I'm resisting it. If you have any of that, that's against energy. If you have against energy, it's going to do you in. And so lots of people hear me talking about against energy, and they go, who could stop against energy? I mean, who can stop it? Nobody knows how to stop against energy. It's impossible. and that's really what I'm teaching. I'm teaching how to eliminate against energy within yourself.
Well, so let's talk about that for a minute, because I ascribe to several people that also ascribe to that philosophy. They, you know, they believe that when you fight against something, you actually are more engaged with the fight as opposed to freeing or liberating yourself from that energy. Now, is that
That's
what
right.
you're saying?
That's
okay.
right.
And so I want to take our listening audience. They're either clinicians, coaches, partners, or sex addicts. Let's take partners, because that's what this show is geared towards. They have been through this horrible, horrendous, devastating, life-shattering experience of being betrayed. And I don't want to minimize an affair, but we're not talking affairs here. We're talking about people that have found out that their husbands or wives have been engaged in sexual betrayal for years and years and years in all sorts of different ways. And of course, as you can imagine, it is devastating. It does make them feel unsafe and insecure. So for those people who have been through this kind of drama and trauma, how might you help them to not fight that internal mechanism that is angry, that wants retaliation, that wants suffering, that wants punishment? Because all those are pretty normal reactions initially to partner betrayal.
Yes. And so because they're normal, we don't think we have to do anything about them. What we think we have to do is just let them out, release them out, and they don't ever release. If you kept releasing all of your ugliness and you just said, I just got to get it out, it never stops coming out. And the reason is because it has a source on literally an endless fountain of ugliness, an endless fountain of against energy. So I have an analogy that I use to explain this simply. It's called the ocean and the beach. So the ocean and the beach analogy goes like this. We're born in an ocean of against energy. And the ocean of against energy, no matter what ocean you're born in, Atlantic, Pacific, Indian Ocean, Mediterranean, it doesn't matter what ocean, there's always sharks everywhere. And so sharks are against energy. And so you can't really go in any ocean to get away from sharks. They're always around you. The only answer is to get out of the ocean and get onto the beach. So the job of getting out of the ocean and onto the beach is not known by most people, because they don't know that there's four steps to get out of the ocean. And this is a very simple explanation for our lack of time. But so the first step that you have to make is acceptance. Acceptance is the first step, because the ocean of against energy hates acceptance, doesn't want you to accept anything, because it's all about against. The ocean is about against energy, so it doesn't want you to be accepting of anything. So when you say, I accept, I am in the ocean of against energy, you have made a statement that has separated you from the ocean, and now you're separate in a very small way. The second step is gratitude. Gratitude says, I have gratitude that I am in the ocean of against energy, because I learned from pain, and this is the pain that will teach me. So I have gratitude that I'm learning from this. And so that's your second step away from the ocean, gratitude. When you have gratitude, any kind of gratitude separates you from the ocean. The third step out of the ocean is called appreciation. And appreciation comes with the appreciation question, which is, what do I love about you? Now, the ocean hates any kind of endorsement of anything. It always wants you to be against. So when you take the person you're dealing with and you say, what do I love about you, Carl? What do I love about you, Jane? And you name three things you love about that person. You have now, just in the act of creating the three things you love about that person, you've created appreciation. You now have an appreciation energy about you. And that's the third step that separates you out of the ocean. And the final step that pulls you out of the ocean and puts you on the beach And on the beach, you're safe because there are no sharks going to go on the beach. Sharks can't go on the beach. So we want to be on the beach because there are no sharks. So that fourth step is called quantum forgiveness. So quantum forgiveness is named that because it's a contrast to religious forgiveness. Religious forgiveness says, you and I are separate. You offended me. You hurt me. And I'm going to forgive you because I'm the better person. And so that's religious forgiveness. And so it's not really forgiveness at all. So quantum forgiveness says, in quantum physics, we learn that at the subatomic level, we are all one. At electrons, protons, and neutrons level, we are all together. We are all single. We are a single entity. And because we are all one, when I forgive you, I'm forgiving myself. And that's what quantum physics is reminding you. So quantum forgiveness is I'm forgiving myself as I forgive you. And so here's the words of quantum forgiveness, and you have to write this down because you'll never remember it. So you are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. Those are the three statements. You are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. Now, when you're forgiving a person this way, realizing that when I forgive you, I'm forgiving myself, you know, people who have all of these troubles in their lives really need to forgive themselves. And they really need to forgive the people who are around them they believe are a threat. And so when you do this kind of forgiveness in those four steps. Yes?
Let me stop you real quick. One more time. Repeat back those three statements. You are good.
You are good is the first statement.
Uh-huh.
Second statement is pure and innocent. And the third statement is all is forgiven and released.
Okay. All is forgiven and released.
And released.
And, of course, that is, those three statements are available to any partner that feels ready to forgive. You know, one of the things we tell partners is that forgiveness piece is totally up to you. You can choose to take as long as you need, if ever, to forgive. Now, Larry, I'm with you in that forgiveness is really for the individual person. So I want everybody to be able to forgive for themselves so that they can surrender to what happened and move on. So I agree with you, and yet I really want to honor our partners out there that, you know, it may take a long time to forgive. Now, you said the three statements, you are good, pure and innocent, and then the last one again is all is forgiven.
All is forgiven and released.
And released. Okay.
And remember, you're being forgiven and this person's being forgiven at the same time.
Okay. So when you're doing this, you are actually making a choice to forgive the other person, and that is forgiving you of any attachment to this horrible drama. And releasing you from the pain.
And remember, you're leaving the ocean you lived in. See, when you realize you're leaving a place that makes your life so dark and so hard, this is a really key visual, that you're leaving a place which is so big that you couldn't escape, the ocean. And now you realize you're leaving the ocean in four steps. That's why forgiveness is the last step. First, acceptance, then gratitude, then appreciation, and finally forgiveness. And those four steps make the forgiveness, the fourth part, possible.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting because I also believe in something called the Ho'oponopono method. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, Dr. Hulen.
Yeah. You got it. And so I clearly, and I'm a coach too, Larry, and a mental health therapist, when I've got somebody who's really angry with me for something, or if I am really angry with them, I use the Ho'oponopono method. And that is a Hawaiian method that goes like this for our listening audience. Obviously, you know exactly what I'm going to say. You know, yeah. I am sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. And thank you. And when I use those words to release the attachment I have to
one of my biggest issues in life, which is it's not fair. It's not fair that he says, mm-hmm. I was just talking earlier, that somebody wrote something terrible about my book, you know, and said that I believed A, B, and C, and I don't believe those things. And I had to do a honopono on her. I had to say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you believe that. Please forgive me for not being clearer about my book. I love you. Well, that I really don't always say to people I don't know, but I do say I appreciate you, which is exactly what you were talking about. And then thank you. Thank you for enlightening me as to what you believe this book was about. And it really mm-hmm. does make you feel like you could do something to change that energy, and that's what you're talking about.
Yes. See, your mm-hmm. leave Ho'oponopono helps you leave the ocean of against energy. It's very powerful to do that. Be able to do that.
Got it. And so let me ask you, because we don't have as much time as I would like, but you refer to something called a chaos kid, and you actually have a scale that references chaos to purpose. It's a scale. So can you tell us a little bit about that tool that you advocate for couples?
So what this is a sense of understanding where you came from. You came from a childhood. In that childhood, you could have had three things: abandonment, abuse, or neglect, physical or emotional. And so when we look at the childhood you had, you have to ask yourself, it's in degrees, how much abandonment, how much abuse, how much neglect. The more you have, the more chaos you have in you. The more chaos you have built in you, and this is important. I want to take the word messages. I want to use that word messages. The messages that were given to you in your childhood are not memories only. They are literally messages that will live a lifetime in your mind. And those messages are installed in your mind by your parents. And when they drop those messages in your mind, they are there. And they're weak in the beginning, in your teen years, in your 20s, when you're at the peak of your life force. But as you get older, as you pass 30, and your 30s, your 40s, what happens is these messages become very strong. And they get stronger and stronger. And so if you're a chaos kid, a kid who has abandonment, abuse, and neglect in the messages in their mind, those messages are going to turn on, they're going to come alive, and when they do, they're going to destroy your relationship because that's what they were made for. They were made to destroy things. And so you might fall in love when you're in your 20s and then get into your 30s, and then the messages turn on and the chaos of your childhood turns on, and all of a sudden the messages that were given to you suddenly become so strong that they take over your personality. And that's a huge traumatic event. I call that the midlife crisis. And so when that midlife crisis turns on, either you or the person you're in the relationship with is going to become the chaos kid. And they're not going to be the person you married. Why? Because the personality is going to be transformed by the childhood chaos. So that's a chaos kid.
Okay. Got it.
Now, what's funny about this, by the way, Carol, is that everybody could be warned about this. Everybody can be warned. But not one person I've ever spoken to has ever known that childhood decides marriage. Not one time have I ever heard a person say childhood decides marriage and knew that what it meant. Childhood decides marriage. You can ask before the wedding how much abandonment, abuse, and neglect do you have in your childhood. And when you get enough stories, you realize your future is going to be this traumatic person is going to take their trauma and pour it on you when you're probably in your 30s. That's like a guarantee. That's not even something that person gets to choose, because when the messages turn on, they are possessed by those messages, owned by those messages, and there's nothing they can do to save you from those messages. So I could warn people before they marry these chaos kids, but they would marry them anyway. And so now the question is, once the chaos comes, what did you learn from it? And there's a lot to learn when you're in pain, a lot to learn.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And so that scale that you referenced, that chaos to purpose
yes.
scale,
so
tell
purpose,
us about that.
Purpose is the purpose child who's raised where mom and dad enjoy each other and mom and dad have a really good, positive, productive relationship. And so that's demonstrated, and these are very balanced people. They are not emotionally torn. They don't have tempers and anger and all this. They're very temper-even people. And so they're enjoyable to be around. And these are the parents of the purpose kid. The parents of the purpose kid raise their purpose kid to be productive in life. And so now, what are the messages? The messages are, I do productive things. I'm responsible. I have self-discipline. I take responsibility for myself. That's the messages of the purpose kid. Okay? No abandonment, no abuse, no neglect. And that's what parents give when they're successful. But when parents don't ever deal with their own childhood pain, they just take it and pour it on their children. Same messages poured onto their children, ready for the next generation. And that's why we have all the sorrow that we have in this world, because it's passed from the parents to the children. And nobody understands it, and nobody wants to learn it. You know, I always threatened to write a book called Screwed from Youth, but nobody would read it. Nobody wants
that,
to know
absolutely.
The truth about their childhood.
Okay.
Because
boy,
we don't want to think that we're going to suffer in the future. But what I'm showing is I can guarantee you you're going to suffer from in the future when you marry a chaos kid. There's not an ands, ifs, or buts. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of which year. But it's going to happen. You have chaos in you. You're going to pour out chaos. You marry somebody with chaos, they're going to pour that chaos out on you. There's just no doubt about it. Just over and over and over again. It always happens.
Well, and so I want to put a disclaimer in here. That, you know, definitely what you're talking about, Larry, is something that we've been taught in psychology our whole lives. And that is that magnetism to the chaos kid, because you've grown up in a chaotic family as a chaos kid, that attracts each other. Now, the disclaimer is that with partner betrayal, and sex addiction, a partner did not attract that sexual addiction into their life. There may have been an attraction to not getting your needs met emotionally or to taking care of somebody more than maybe you needed to. But in terms of the chaos of sexual addiction, this is a disclaimer, these men and women, mostly women, but some men, were 100% tricked, deceived, duped. And so they didn't know what they didn't know. So I just want to make sure that our listening audience knows that we're not saying, hey, you attracted this sex addict into your life. Because
That's right, Carol. That's right.
Yeah.
Because you know what you don't want to do? You don't want to blame yourself for this person. But let's go back to childhood. I've discovered that people who are raised on the purpose side of the scale, who marry chaos kids, I ask them a question all the time. I've done this for years. The question is, did your parents take care of the less fortunate? Did they show you that we needed to take care of the less fortunate? And I always hear yes. So what happens is that we are now getting a message. The message is, I need to take the care of the less fortunate. And what happens then is I end up wanting to marry the less fortunate. So that's how purpose kids marry chaos kids. They marry the less fortunate.
Got it. Okay. So.
But nobody's at fault here. There's no fault. There's no blame to be sent around, you know, for partners. There's no blame to be sent around. You know, you can't say, I attracted this. You have no idea what you did. You don't know what you did. You don't know why you did it. You don't know why you married this person. You thought you were in love. It turns out, those brain chemicals, oxytocin, dopamine, endorphins, those things are brain chemicals that are temporary. And if you were under the influence of those, you were going to marry whoever that was. And you don't want to take the blame for that. That's not your fault. That's a chemistry, right? It has to happen. So we're not thinking too much when we're young. In our 20s, we're not thinking too much about the long-term effects. And that's really why marriages have become so temporary, because we're not thinking about the long-term effects. And the culture now has become a culture of personal happiness. I want personal happiness at all costs. And if somebody makes me unhappy, I'm going to leave them because I want personal happiness. And so I'm not going to stay and I'm not going to learn from this. I am going to go find somebody else. But here's the problem. When you go find somebody else, you're taking the messages of childhood with you. And they will go into the next relationship and do it again, which explains the divorce rate for the third and fourth marriages.
Absolutely.
You take the messages with you.
You do take those messages with you. And I want to ask you before we end, because we've got about five more minutes, what do you believe is the single biggest piece of advice that you can give for someone who has been betrayed by their spouse or their partner?
You have to get more control of your own mind. You have to get more control of your own mind, because your mind is making this world what it is. And if you don't control your own mind, if you don't control your own thoughts, if you don't even understand your own thoughts, this is why I call becoming the environment changer the solution. Being a pinball is the problem. A pinball is reactionary. An environment changer changes their own mind. And as they change their own mind, they change the environment of their mind. And that's the greatest piece of advice ever. Change your own mind. And it takes work and it takes study and practice to change your own mind, to learn what you think, to learn the stories you tell, to actually hear the words coming out of your mouth, to actually become aware. And when you're ready to become aware, you want to become an environment changer, a person who changes the environment of their own mind. You want to leave the world of the reactionary pinball, whose obsession, first and foremost, is to constantly react to what's going on. That's their life, reacting to what's going on. And so they're constantly bouncing off the reaction of what's going on. And so that's called the pinball.
Yeah, that was succinct and clear. And they called that the pinball. Now, I want to tell everybody, I am talking to Larry Blotta. Am I saying your last name right, Blotta?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Thank you.
Absolutely. And you can find him on his website, www.survivemidlifecrisis.com. He actually has a teleclass, and he's got free copies of his Chaos to Purpose Scale by going to www.youcansavethismarriage.com/midlifecrisis or marriage meltdown. So, Larry, how can they get a hold of you personally?
For men, they can go to itonlytakesoneman.com, and women can go to itonlytakesonewoman.com. And what that's about is that's about environment changers. It only takes one. It takes one to change the environment.
Well, you are very empowering. I can definitely tell that, you know, when I asked you what's your biggest single piece of advice, you say what we say so often, which is work on yourself, get healthy, lots of intentional self-care, and work on releasing the emotions that you no longer want to carry with you. And if that involves the other person, great. If that involves your childhood, great. If it involves just feeling like life has not been fair, great. So, Larry Blotta, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our group today. Are you there with me? All right. I don't know if he heard that. Larry, are you there? I don't think he did. But I know you're hearing me. And so, again, that was Larry Blotta. And he has a free copy of Chaos to Purpose Scale
at YouCanSaveThisMarriage.com. And hey, thanks everybody for being a part of the show today. And, you know, as I say at the end of every show that I do, I say there will always and only be one of you at all times, and I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. So make it a great week, and we'll see you again for more appsats.org.
For more information, go to appsats.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.